She didn't have it, she came.
Yeah. I was working for a brokerage firm in Miami. I was a receptionist. And one of the brokers there was Steve Kahan. And so Steve Kahan, I was always very curious about Steve Kahan because he always gave me such a hard time. I used to answer his phones, and there were lots of phones, and they were ringing all day long, as they always do in a broker's office. So Steve Kahan, his orders were to me that I should never, never tell any one of his clients that he was on the line or that he was in the john. I would have to entertain them until he was free, giving them no reason, no reason. So this was absolutely opposite to the regular business procedure, and I thought it was, I didn't think he was serious when he first told me that, so I proceeded to use my better judgment and to tell him he's on the line, he'll be right with you, or he'll be right back, and he blew up every time I did that. So I was very curious about Steve Kahan. I couldn't understand it, and yet he was one of the most prosperous agents there. The phones were always ringing for him. So it was my 21st birthday, and the girls in the office, they were a nice group of girls. They put a sign on my desk that I didn't know about, and the sign said, "Rosie is 21 today, and we'd like to have lunch at the Mousetrap between 12 and 1. So Steve Kahan comes prancing in. And he looks
that's a restaurant, the Mousetrap?
Yeah, the restaurant, the big restaurant. So Steve Kahan comes prancing in, and he says, "Hey, Rosie, how about lunch today?" And I said, "Is that nice?" I said, "How did he know it was my birthday today, you know?" So he took me out to lunch, and he didn't say much of anything. He only said that Robin was God. That's all he said. And he gave me a universal message. So, like Tim, I didn't know why I was doing everything that I did. I didn't know why I proceeded to follow Bobby's instructions and think about him all the time. Mentally, I hadn't decided that Baba was God, but my heart knew what was going on, so I started taking Baba's name all the time, plugging in the switchboard, and that's how it happened. Not knowing, I didn't know why, but it happened like that. And that same day, Irwin Luck came in to visit Steve. So that same day that I heard about Baba, Irwin Luck came in, and I met Irwin Luck for a few minutes and chatted with him.
You'll be happy to know when Steve Kahan was here and he wanted to help in the trust office, I made it a bit difficult for him too. Erich gave him just
all those awful,
awful addresses to type, you know, names he didn't know and places, names that are tongue twisters even to us. And he just typed.
And Max, how about you? How were you dragged in?
Well, many years ago, I think it was maybe 16, 17, and I had never really had the sense of any type of tranquility. There was much agitation in me. And one night, I was by myself, and I noticed the movie, and it said a story about the razor-thin line between love and hate with Tyrone Power. So I said, "Oh, it sounds like an interesting movie." And then I stayed up late to watch it, and it was The Razor's Edge by Somerset Maugham.
On the TV or a regular movie?
It was on the television.
Oh, the television.
I was home by myself, and I watched this movie. And as I saw the movie, I saw that it was more than just a story about the thin line between love and hate. It was about a man that was looking for something, and he was compelled, he was in sort of aristocratic society and so on, and he was ready to get married with a woman, but he wasn't ready for it, and so he had to go and he had to wander around, and he wandered here and there and spent some time in France as an artist, and I've since read the book in Israel. I read it recently and I found that it's much more. But I had a sense of something going on in the movie. And he wanders there And he, at one time he works with a man in some caves, coal mining caves, and there's a man there who's very, very, he's wild and so on. But whenever he got drunk, he would speak on very elevated themes and so on. And whenever he was sober again, and this man would tell him, what did you speak about? He said, I don't know what you're talking about. And so he had, and he would read too, he would go to the library for hours, and he would read various books and so on. And finally, his journeys took him to India, and there he met a master of some sort, and he spent some time with this master, and one morning he was meditating, I believe, in the movie, and the sun rises, and it fills him, it fills his heart, and he senses then a certain something, the unity, maybe the love of God for him, maybe his own sense of worth. And then he returns to the society he came from, and people sense that he has something, he has some power. His power, I think he says in the movie, he says, I sense that the most important thing in life is to be good, to serve. And they sense this, and he helps some people. Some people are sick, and through his love, he's helped them. In the movie, they present it as if it's almost psychic power or something. They have to make it more direct rather than just the love. They can't convey that completely in the movie. And then he decides that he'll take on a simple job. He becomes a taxi cab driver because he feels that in that role, it's good enough to serve. Anyway, this I didn't appreciate all these things, but I felt something from the movie. And I was a junior in high school that year, and we had to write an autobiography, what my life was like and so on. It was supposed to include the books I've read and people I've met and movies I've seen that have influenced me. And I remember writing at the very end, I sort of tried to convey some of this lack of tranquility I felt inside. And I remember writing, even though I don't have that tranquility now, I feel that one day I will find the answer to this longing, this looking. And I handed it in for granted. Many years later, I was at the university, and I was in a fraternity in Pennsylvania, and I was it happened that a group of, I think, Buddhist chanters came. Some fraternity brother got interested and invited them. And they had, again, I was reminded of this tranquility, because they had this look of tranquility about them. And things happened in the university, ups and downs and so on, and it happened that I decided to change universities. But this stuck in my mind, this look about their face, this peace, sort of peace with themselves. And the first thing that was on my mind was when I came to my new university in Wisconsin, that I would find somebody to teach me meditation. So I went there, and that was the first thing on my mind, and I went around and I found some student, a Hawaiian student, and he taught me, it was meditation on the letter A. But I wasn't very disciplined and I didn't stick with it. And then the transcendental meditation people came, Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. And they came and I became initiated. But I, again, couldn't sit down twice a day, 20 minutes and so on. But I remember in the initial lecture, there was one boy who stood up, he had red hair. Jeff was his name. And from Wisconsin. I don't remember his last name. Anyway, he stood up and he asked a question that stuck in my mind, which was, how can one distinguish a real master among several masters? He asked that and sat down, but it stuck in my mind. And so I was initiated. The summer went by, months went by, and a very difficult time for me at the university. It was in the summer of, it was about July of 1969, or July, and I hadn't done that meditation for a long time. But I decided one day I'd go to a group meditation, which they had at the university. And I went there, and it was a nice meditation. And afterwards, I saw this one who was wearing a Baba button. And I didn't know what the button was. It looked very strange. I couldn't see it from this. And I just asked him, who's that a picture of? And he said, it's a picture of Mayor Baba. I said, okay. And then I invited him to my home, and he brought the universal message. And I read it. And it was nice, but I had studied Bhagavad Gita and so on, some Indian thought before that. I said, well, it's nice, but it's nothing new.
Yeah, that's right.
It's nothing new. And again, I set it aside. And about half a year later, Jeff invited me to go to drive down with him and a few other boys from Madison, Wisconsin to Myrtle Beach for Christmas there in 1969. And there were very few people there then. And through the feeling there, the love the people had, their naturalness, I was pushed more and more. And then after I graduated, I lived for 2.5 years. I thought I would be coming to Myrtle Beach, just staying 2 weeks and going out to Denver. But Baba kept me there 2.5 years. And all through that time, well, here I am now. I didn't think that Baba would let me come here for decades. I left Myrtle Beach. I didn't think for decades that I'm going to my class. So.
And then when you went to Israel?
That was
interesting.
See, this is interesting. When I went to Israel, see, what happened was I had... No, here's how it happened. I had finished teaching in Myrtle Beach. That was a very interesting experience. Not easy. Nothing's easy with Baba, but it all makes sense afterwards. And I was having lunch at Phyllis and Lynn Ott's home. And Phyllis asked me, well, what are you going to be doing in September? This was about May. I said, oh, I'm not doing anything. I don't want to teach again, especially. I'm free. And so Phyllis said, well, that's very nice. You're free. And I said, I really don't know what I should be doing. And just then Phyllis turns to me, and I think because her daughter, Mimi, was in Israel at that time. And no, actually, not this is what happened. There was a picture of Mimi that was sitting on the dresser outside, and Phyllis was sitting in the kitchen looking out. That picture toppled over. And and then she said to me, Max, you know, this summer you should be in Israel. You should go to Israel and India, or India and Israel. I don't know what she said first. And she said that, there was a click. It was like something with Israel clicked. And it was that wind. It was very strong, you know. And I rushed home and I called my father. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go to Israel. And he said, well, this is the first thing you're doing in 8 years that I like. So I think it's going here and there. He said, oh, that's good. But I felt it so strongly that I rushed home. And now it seems that I've come to India too.
Yeah.
So what Phyllis said came, both Israel and India.
And what it meant to carry, you know, a lot. Carrie Ben-Shammai in Israel. When she would come, when she came in 1969, she really represented the whole of Israel, as it were. To us, it wasn't Carrie, it was Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Or when she'd send a cable on the birthday. She really... The I wouldn't even say intense. It's something that there's nothing else but Baba's love for her. It's amazing. But she could come in on, you know, on behalf of Israel. She would say, love from Carrie and Israel. And it's really like Carrie and Israel. Very wonderful. And she would write what a lot it meant for her to have. Sometime a Baba lover would be there. First there was Jacko for a year. She would... And then Jacko was here in India, and then I said, oh, poor Carrie. And then Max came. Baba was in just in the right time. There was one? Portnoy?
Dennis Portnoy.
Thanks, sir.
Excuse me for rushing out, but Carrie sent some prasad from Israel.
Oh, that's wonderful.
She has a letter in here, so I don't know if this is a good time to give it to you, but she wanted me to give it, and you can look at it, and
yes,
see if you want to share it. So.
Hmm.
Of the blueprint.
Sorry, Baba.
I'm not sure, maybe we'll put it in. Right, Dave?
Yeah.
Jacko.
Oh, you got it.
Thank you.
Do you know the story of dates with Muhammad?
Muhammad?
Yeah.
Or Muhammad the Master?
No, Prophet Muhammad. Baba is Muhammad. Baba is Muhammad. Not Muhammad as Muhammad. So, this is the story that Baba told us once, you see, as to how even he has to follow the discipline. It so happened that while Muhammad was sitting with his close one day rushes inside the hall a lady, a woman, dragging her own child. Must be about 14 years or so. And she started, you see, complaining to the Lord, saying that, please exhort this child, do something for him, otherwise he'll die eating dates and all that. And he's so fond of dates that I can't separate him from the date tree and all that. All sorts of things, you see. And Mama just nodded and heard. She went on haranguing for nearly 10 minutes. Then he said that, well, I will tell him about it all, but do come after a month. You can go back now and bring him again after a month. Well, she had no other recourse. She had to go back. And the close ones had watched her. She was so poor, and she had come from a very long distance. And of course, there was no means of transport except, you know, in Arabia, what it's all like. So there were no jet planes or cars or anything of the sort at that time. So she, poor thing, went back. And after a month, she did come. And then Muhammad was told again the same thing. The same story was repeated. And after that, Muhammad, of course, took only 5 or 10 minutes to explain to the young one, the young man, says, look how harmful it is, and you should try to help your mother, try not to eat many dates. But that doesn't mean that you should not eat dates. You can eat dates if you want to, but not more than 6 a day, and so forth. And eventually he extracted promise from the young one, and everybody was happy, the mother was happy, the child was happy, and the Lord seemed to be very happy, and the close ones were very happy, and they child and the mother left. In the minds of all the close ones, the thought started arising. Why could he not have said the same thing and sent her back that very day? Why was she called after a month? So then they didn't say anything. Nobody dared to say anything to the Lord. So, but he knew what was happening in the minds of his close ones. So then on his own, as Baba has, we know how he would bring out these things from our minds and hearts. So eventually he got the thing out. Somebody vomited this out. He must have asked, what are you thinking? What's in your mind? Or something like that. So they all said the same thing. So he laughed. He says, you know why I didn't dare say the same thing that time? Because I myself was so fond of dates. I eat so many dates. How is it possible for me to exhort the child there like that? It won't carry the weight.
That's different. I mean, that sounds like that.
Yeah, so I had to abstain from dates for one full month in order to bring home to him. So that's what Baba says, that I also have to follow certain disciplines in order to bring home to you certain truths. Practice what you preach. Again, the same thing.
Why? Doctors don't practice what they preach, but doctors are very necessary to say what you should...
But then they have to use knives. He doesn't use knives.
Ah.
Norman.
Sorry.
What is it?
Tell us. What? Any more questions?
How beautiful it is to record silence. It is so silent. Silence was being recorded.
Except the tick of the clock.
That clock's ticked for Baba. It still goes on ticking.
Unfortunately, the tape recorder is the battery's out of juice.
You've got exhausted.
You did? Cool. Sign D. C battery. It's a shame because I haven't.
You know, but like Eric was just saying, he probably asked, what are you thinking? And Baba would sometimes ask that. All of a sudden, like when you're sitting around, Baba would suddenly say, "What are you thinking?" Mm-hmm. And you'd be caught sometimes in a very embarrassing moment. You wouldn't want to say aloud for all of them to hear what you were thinking. You knew Baba knew. But in that way, Baba was reminding us to always remember him, to also be aware of your thoughts, because thoughts, we take it for granted. We just let them rush and trample through our minds in any way they like, but that you have to be aware of your thoughts. And also that when you are before Baba, you should be present, in his presence, not be away. And as I think I've repeated that a number of times, but once I was caught and Baba said, "What are you thinking?" And I was thinking of somebody saying, "What an awful colored blouse she's got on. It doesn't suit her. That color never suits her. But doesn't she look in the mirror? She keeps wearing that blouse. It's awful." I dare say. I can live with a person. Baba will be going over to the men, Muslim, but what about me? And the others too. Usually the answer would be, "Oh, nothing important, Baba," which is right. But after that, you would see everybody was just thinking of Baba, waiting so much for Baba to ask, "What are you thinking?" And then they said, "You, Baba. He didn't ask."
This reminds me of another very good, interesting incident.
Yes, would Rosie and Max like to go over? After this.
After this incident, yes.
And no, Tim has been. You have not been in to Baba's room to Mara.
Yes,
you have been. But until you finish this
yeah.
thing.
So.
Okay, the incident. Oh, yes, Polly and Kyle. Come on, Eric.
Polly seems to be so sagacious, you see, brushing his beard, you know. What's in your mind?
Did you
the price, yeah.
Last time, Polly?
No.
That will suit you so much, your short hair. I checked, but see?
So what happened is, you know that Everything in the Nothing, that book Everything in the Nothing? These are the explanations that have been given by Baba in answer to queries of certain professor who was a scientist from Delhi College. So most of the chapters that are devoted there, they are in answer to the questions put by this man to Baba whenever he would come during his vacation at Guru Prasad and all that. So eventually, of course, all these answers were compiled and all that and everything, and the book went to the press, and you know it was printed and published in Australia, the Everything and the Nothing.
So you see, it had to be visitors to ask questions.
Yeah.
If it went so, we wouldn't be asking, and there would be no Everything and Nothing. There'd just be nothing.
So. Of course, the sessions were very helpful to us, very enlightening. Baba was in good humor because he would always prod this man to ask more and more. Some work was to be done, naturally this book had to come out eventually. So he was made the instrument. So he would ask and all that sort of thing. It went on and on, every now and then whenever he would come, he would put a question and Baba would answer. The book was published, was in the press for publication, and it was also out there in a college, it was published. The man had come again, another vacation afterwards. So he was seated like this, yes. And he must be having some thoughts in his mind, just as Mani said, "Well, what are you thinking?" Baba is asking. "Aren't you happy that the book is out now, that you were instrumental, you see, in getting so many answers and the public will benefit by it? Aren't you happy about it?" He says, "Well, that's Baba." He believed in Baba as God in human form. He was a scientist, mind you. He was the principal, principal of Camp College, Delhi, one of the biggest colleges, universities, you see. He was the principal. He had invited Baba to that Camp College and everything was there. That's past history. But now Baba is asking, and he doesn't seem to be very cheerful this time. So Baba says, "What is the matter? What are you thinking? Aren't you happy about the whole thing?" He says, "I am. It's your work, Baba. But, you know, no sooner I left you last time, and when we said that everything is now satisfactory and all my questions have been answered, but I completely forgot, you see. There's one thing that always intrigues me now, after the whole episode is over. The book is now out on the shelves, you see, of the booksellers. Baba says, what is it? What's wrong with it? What's the question that I haven't answered now? This is like completely... I ignore that question, not that because I came... that question came to my mind, but it came to me, it appeared before, after the book was published. He says, what is it? What's the question? So, he says, it is intriguing, Baba. I am a scientist, and I don't know how to put this question to you. So Baba says, what's intriguing now? After so many questions have been answered, what's intriguing? He says, Baba, I believe in my heart of hearts that you are God in human form. There is no doubt now in my mind about it. But the one thought is intriguing. What is it, Baba? He says, how could this infinite, which you are, your infinite consciousness, you're infinite in all respects, in all your attributes. How could this infinity be bottled up in this frame, which is Meher Baba now? So that has been worrying me a lot. Baba says it's real, it's a question, real question. But that can be, that we'll see. But do you know that shouldn't make you sad, that shouldn't make you miserable? Because there are quite a few things that intrigue me, the Creator, also, about my creation. So you will be able to help me through your science and that respect. So he bucked up, you see, that now there is the God-man himself asking him to solve his intrigue, you see, about his intrigue. So Baba says, you know, there is a thing that has been intriguing me quite often. So he says, what is it, Baba? He was seated somewhere here. He says, what do you see from this door? He says, well, I see the sand rows that are there. What do you see? Just that? This is the benches. What else do you see? He says, see the trees, the plants, the pots, the papaya fruit on the trees.
Yeah.
That's all? He says, no, I see cattle grazing. There is a shepherd there. Then what else do you see? Just that? He says, no, I see the hills there, the range of hills there. Then there is another hill behind that hill I can see. Just that? He says, no, I see the horizon, the sky over there. That's the thing Baba says that intrigues me always. How could this little iris of yours can absorb such vastness in this tiny little thing? You follow me? Just that was the answer to it.
So the Baba was making it out as he was putting a question. He was really giving the answer to the man.
Through a counter question. So that's how he would deal with these people, you know.
Achcha.
Now you all can go if you want to.
So the Sheikh and Shura, Rosie and...
By the way, before you all leave, Gil,
yes.
It seems that you all are so interested about any parallels in the life of Jesus and Meher Baba. There is another parallel that we came across, and that was Jesus limped also.
Limped?
Yeah. Did you all know that?
No.
It was after great research, you see, of a certain scholar who has written a book on the whole thing.
Oh, Meher Baba.
Have you come across that?
No.
We have the passage recorded for you, Gil.
Okay.
It's called King Jesus, and he gave us the paper, and we recorded it on a tape.
It was read out to
yeah.
Baba. Of that, the whole thing.
How his hip was broken.
Yeah. This is, well, there's nothing new in it. That God-man can limp.
Love, without meaning you loved him. Was there any time where he gave the impression that any certain he didn't care for?
Yeah, when he wanted to draw us closer to him, he would be indifferent to us. There were quite many occasions, you see. Just to draw, when we felt ourselves so privileged, you see, he always played upon the ego experiences of individuals, you see. So another thing that is
and
most
God knew that he was,
when they have come just now. So what happened is that whenever we felt that we were the privileged ones, that we are the ones who have the privilege to be by his side and close and all that, and we our ego inflated, then gradually he would just, his attention would be focused elsewhere, so to say, you see. And then we would feel the pinch of it, and then we would become more humble. And then again he would draw us close to him. That was his way of drawing us closer and closer to him. Now and then he would just turn his focus aside. But one important thing, that whenever people visited him, or whenever there was a large congregation,